What you see here is a young Louis Armstrong just reaching the height of his abilities. His innovations would determine what the next chapter of jazz sounded like, but he would have to make them away from New Orleans. Jazz musicians had started to leave New Orleans even before Storyville was destroyed in 1917. This had less to do with music than just life. Black Southerners of all kinds had heard about better opportunities and safer lives elsewhere in the country, and the promise of a middle-class audience in Chicago, Los Angeles, or New York was too good for many musicians to resist. Louis was one of the later ones to leave. He was one of the younger generation of jazz artists. Louis believed he had been born on the 4th of July, 1900. The date on his birth certificate, August 4th, 1901, is a little less romantic, but still puts him growing up at the right time to hear Buddy Bolden and his compatriots. And Louis also grew up in Storyville, where his mother lived, as did a surrogate family of his who often fed and cared for him as a child. He worked from the age of 7 selling coal, a profession he returned to after his stint in juvenile detention. But he also increasingly worked as a musician. By his own account, his nickname Satchmo came from the days he spent dancing, singing, and playing the cornet on street corners for spare change. When he was thrown a coin, he'd hide it in his mouth so no one could see he had anything to steal. Apparently people noticed it enough to call him Satchel Mouth, which, according to him, became Satchmo, which is maybe what Satchel Mouth sounds like if you say it with a mouthful of nickels. At first, the departure of older musicians was an opportunity for Louis. When King Oliver, an older cornetist, left town to play in California and Chicago, Louis got hired to replace him. But eventually, that same cornetist, King Oliver, asked Louis to come to Chicago and join a band he'd started there. So in May of 1922, Armstrong boarded the City of New Orleans train to make the trip. Louis had already traveled much of the route that train runs. He'd been playing on a steamboat going up and down the Mississippi, but the switch from a steamboat to a train reflected what was going on in New Orleans generally. Commercially, New Orleans had flourished in the early part of the 19th century, in part because the whole country needed the Mississippi for shipping. But the later 19th century brought a shift from rivers to trains. New Orleans in the early 20th century felt passé. Louisiana was just hooking up with the oil and gas industry when Louis was born, and the tourism that fuels much of the state today was still on the horizon. So giving up a steamboat for a train would have been par for the course. His trip also would have been uncomfortable. His mother, who hadn't left New Orleans and thought Chicago was cold all year, made him wear long underwear, no doubt resulting in a sweaty arrival on a hot May day in Chicago. In this way, too, Louis was very much of his time, barging into the unknown, unprepared in many ways, but girded by a hard childhood to do whatever it took to make things work. The job Louis had been invited to fill was second cornet, not a job that existed in most jazz bands, and not one that would do much to help a young artist shine. But Louis's abilities were building, as King Oliver's were waning. In the coming years, Oliver would have a harder and harder time playing due to mouth issues, while Louis was able to play more loudly and more creatively than most. This promise was noticed by the pianist in the band, a woman named Lil Hardin. Lil and Louis got married in 1924. Sometime in here, Louis claims Lil told him, "I don't want to be married to a second cornetist." Lil coached and encouraged him toward bigger opportunities, first to a position in another band in New York, then to a band of their own back in Chicago. The recordings they made under Louis's direction, the Hot Five and Hot Seven recordings, stand as the first clear signs of Louis's brilliance as a soloist, which eventually pulled the whole genre in the direction of emphasizing improvised solos alongside and often above ensemble playing. And it was this gift for solo performance that would bring him to the iconic status he occupies today. Louis and Lil separated in 1931, and Louis would be married two more times, but their lives remained connected. After Louis's death in 1971, Lil played in his memorial concert, where she had a heart attack in the middle of her performance and died on the way to the hospital. There are two more important monuments in this part of the park, which you can see from near Louis or which you can go check out up close. To Louis's right is a large building called the Mahalia Jackson Theater for the Performing Arts. In front of it, at the near end, is a statue of its namesake, Mahalia Jackson. A little closer to the walk is a bust of Sidney Bechet, We'll have some details on both of them next.